little bit older, the father had to go out of town for one day. So he asked his son, you do the worship. I've showed you everything. You know how to do everything. Your mother, she'll prepare the meal. Pay attention. Pay attention. This is responding to your question. So, little boy, he brought the plate from his mother, placed it before the deity, and waited, said the prayers, and waited for the deity to eat. And Gopinath didn't eat. So he cried and he pleaded, Gopinath, please accept this offering. So Gopinath ate everything. And his mother came and said, where's the plate? He said, Gopinath ate it all. And when the boy's father came home, that was his meal for the day. He said, where's the meal? He said, oh. Our son made an offering and he said that Gopinath ate everything. What? Gopinath ate everything. Tomorrow morning we'll make a preparation. You ask him to make the offering. I'll stand behind the door and watch. Same thing. The young boy placed the whole plate before the deity, said his prayers, and waited for Gopinath to eat. And Gopinath didn't eat. And so he again said, please accept. I haven't made any offense. I'm offering this to you with love. Please accept. So Gopinath picked up with his right hand, he picked up a laddu and took a bite out of the laddu. And his father from behind the door said, I see. Gopinath put the laddu back on the plate and stood there. Sometimes the deity eats everything. Not always. He eats everything, but he usually leaves everything. Because his eating process is not like you and me. If we eat everything, it's gone. When Krishna eats everything, it's still there. Okay. So we're going to have class, and you can have some more questions later, okay? Huh? Okay. You know the words to Jai Radha Madhava? You do. Fantastic. How about you? Also? Yes or no? Do we have the words in someone's phone? The Jai Radha Madhava words? So he knows? He knows. He's making like he doesn't know. But he knows. Okay. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari. If you have one of these, please turn it off or vibrate or something, because it'll be very embarrassing if your phone rings in the middle of class. We wouldn't want that. Me too. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're going to go to Vrindavan. Right now, by sound. No visa, no passport, no long plane ride. By sound. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 38, is Akrura going to Vrindavan. So, a little background. Who is Akrura? Answer. Akrura is Krishna's uncle. And actually, he's several generations elder to Krishna. And when Akrura goes to visit Krishna, Krishna's around 11 years, 8 months. He's not yet 12. How old are you? How old are you? Age? 9 and a half. Working on 10, right? Yeah. He was 11 and a little more than half. Pretty young. And Balaram, same. And Akrura was very old. And they were from the same Krishna as the son of Vasudeva and Devaki. Of course, he doesn't belong to any family. But he took his birth, his pastime of taking birth, in that same dynasty, the Yadu dynasty, as Akrura. So Akrura was staying on in Mathura because he knew that Krishna would appear. Several reasons. One of the reasons was Kamsa? Bad guy, right? Kamsa. Kamsa was a bad guy. Kamsa was told that the eighth child of Devaki would kill him. And Krishna was the eighth child of Devaki. And he was told that the eighth child of Devaki, that one that was told he would kill you, that's Krishna. I mean, Narada told him. Narada. Why did Narada tell him that? Because he wanted to hurry up and have Kamsa killed. And he knew that Krishna would do it. So he told Kamsa, hey, Kamsa, the eighth child of Devaki, he's over there in Braja, son of Nanda Maharaj. He's actually the son of Vasudeva. Vasudeva tricked you. What? I'm going to kill Vasudeva. No. If you harm Vasudeva, Krishna will run away. He'll hide. You won't be able to kill him. You want to kill Krishna, not Vasudeva. Don't make that mistake. Be smart. Kamsa, come on. Invite him here to Mathura. Have a big festival. Have a big celebration. Brahmanas, this and that. And you can kill him when he comes here. Narada knew that Krishna would kill Kamsa, but he wanted to make the arrangement so Krishna could kill him in Mathura. There's many other details, but so Akrura, Uncle Akrura, was sent to bring Krishna. Oh, Akrura was really happy. I get to see Krishna. He was seeing Krishna in his meditation, although he had never met Krishna. He just heard descriptions of Krishna. So he knew what he looked like through descriptions, and he was in meditation upon seeing Krishna within his heart. But now he was going to see Krishna directly before him. So he's on this really special chariot arranged by Kamsa. Just Akrura, because there had to be room for Krishna and Balaram to come on the chariot. So he's alone, absorbed in Krishna meditation. And specifically, the anticipation of meeting him. Just like all of us, we're chanting. And what's the purpose of chanting? Well, It's to remember our relationship with Krishna that we've forgotten. And the way to remember Krishna when we've forgotten him is to consider how to be of service to him. Rishikeni Rishikesha Sevanam. You use your senses to serve the master of the senses, like offering your food to Krishna. You use your senses to serve the master of the senses. And you make a nice offering, and Krishna is pleased. And then you have Krishna Prasadam. And a whole lifestyle that's remembrance of Krishna like that. So we're chanting to remember our relationship with Krishna with the prayer that one day, even in this lifetime, Krishna may be present before us and we can directly serve him. So he can come before us in his deity form also. He can come before us in his literature form. Srimad Bhagavatam is said to be, according to Padma Purana, Srimad Bhagavatam is Krishna himself in a literature form, a literary form. Just like the name is Krishna himself in a sound vibration form. So we're chanting and we're reading and maybe we're worshiping, but we don't have that realization yet. So Akura, that's the place that he's in that place. He's in the place of anticipating with great eagerness today. Today, I'm going to see the Lord of my life, who I've been singing his praises and remembering and offering prayers to. I'm going to see him. The anticipation is really fitting for us. We're not way up there. We're way down here. But the anticipation of coming to that stage of life is an important element in getting there. It may be far, but you know, there's this saying, even a very long journey begins with the first step, and then the next step. So we're making step by step towards what end? Being with Krishna again. Not just notionally or religiously, but practically. So that's the application part, the anticipation. And that's what Akura is teaching us. So he's, in addition to many of the verses that we heard about his feelings, ecstatic bhavas of different types, he's now going to the topic of Krishna Tattva, or the truths about Krishna. So I'm going to read, for those of you that want to follow along, 10:38:13. 10:38:13. You ready? We're going to Vrindavan now. Okay, let's go. Akura is not speaking, he's thinking to himself. Shukadeva is explaining his thoughts. That same Supreme Lord has descended into the dynasty of the Satvatas. That's another name for this Yadu dynasty, the Satvatas. Those who are situated in Sat, or in truth. Satvatas. Why did he descend? To delight the exalted demigods who maintain the principles of religion he has created. Residing in Vrindavan, he spreads his fame, which the demigods glorify in song and which bring auspiciousness to all. So, what's that to delight the demigods? Well, going back to the early parts of Canto 10, the demigods were harassed. And earth was harassed, both. So earth, in the form of a cow, went to the demigods. The demigods went to Brahma. Brahma went to the shore of the milk ocean and prayed, Vishnu, help. So he said, I'll come. I'll protect you. I'll relieve the earth of the burden of demoniac kings. That's the reference. Krishna descended into this realm because of the prayers of the demigods for relief and Mother Earth for relief from the burden of demoniac kings on the surface of the earth. It was really intense. And those same demigods who were being delighted by Krishna's making his appearance, they're also being described as the maintainers of Dharma. What's Dharma? You know the meaning? Some idea? Dharma. How about you? Oh, yes, you know. Dharma. No, you're behind you. This young girl behind you in the purple dress. Dharma. Commonly, Dharma means religion or religious activity, duties that are prescribed within Scripture. There's a deeper meaning or a more literal meaning, and Dharma means that which sustains. So that which sustains the living entity is their constitutional position of being in service to the Supreme. There's a long explanation. Well, I'll do it a little bit. A shorter explanation than the long one. Prabhupada liked to speak about this topic because religion can change. Supposing someone's born in this one, they can become that one, they get married, they take up that one, and all around the place. You can change the belief that you have from this one to that one, if religion means belief system. But you can't change that which sustains the living entity, the essence of the living entity. So the essence of the living entity is what? That which is the essence of the living entity is service. Supposing you don't serve God. You serve somebody. Everybody serves somebody. In this example, that example, it's the constitutional position of living entity to render service. So, done. Sanatana Dharma is that which doesn't change. Service to the Supreme. So the demigods are upholders of those principles, time, place, circumstance, but the principle of service to the Supreme. And they uphold them. It's one of the things that they do. They maintain the universe, obviously. They have different departments of activity that they oversee this and that. They maintain the government of the universe. That's what demigods do. But they do it by theistic conduct, by upholding Dharma. Because there's power in upholding Dharma. There's spiritual power. They are empowered to do what their service is because they're upholders of Dharma. So he, that same Supreme Lord being spoken of in the previous 10 verses, has appeared in the dynasty of the Satvatas, this Yadu dynasty group, for the pleasure and delight of the demigods who maintain principles of religion, which he created. He created the place. He created the principles of Dharma for the place. And the demigods are upholding those principles of Dharma, of the place that they're overseeing, maintaining the affairs of the universe. And he's residing in Vrindavan, and that's where I'm going. He's like, I can't wait. Very enthusiastic. Very enthusiastic. And what do the demigods do? Well, another thing that they do, besides maintain the affairs of the universe and uphold the principles of Dharma, they express, they sing the songs of the glories of the Lord. And by singing those praises of the Lord, it's helping them to create an atmosphere of auspiciousness for everyone within the universe. So we're not controllers of the universe, but we can create auspiciousness all around us by the same method. That is, hear, chant, and remember the topics of the personality of Godhead. It's good for us, and it's good for the whole atmosphere. Even, you know, the trees outside. Or the little bugs. Little bugs? Yeah. Good for them too. Or like, you know, is that a plant over there in the corner? No. Sometimes people have, is this a plant? Okay. So there's a plant over here. Nice flowers. But the plant is growing because there's a soul inside. In the root region of the plant is where the soul is. And so when we have kirtan, that soul is getting spiritual benefit. And if you offer water to the plant that's been offered to Krishna, water that's been offered to Krishna, they get more spiritual benefit. Because it's Krishna Prasadam. Krishna Prasadam, Krishna. So the soul is getting benefit. The plant is going to get water if you water it with regular water, but water it with the other kind, what's been offered to Krishna kind. And they'll go, yummy! Krishna Prasadam. So by the activity of hearing and chanting, auspiciousness is created in the atmosphere, and all living entities receive benefit. Although we're just sitting here in, you know, one room, the benefit goes beyond this room. Okay, so now we're going to read the commentaries. Here's Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. He says the word in this verse, this morning's verse, yat means fame. That's all. Jiva Goswami writes, the Lord who glances over Prakriti, because that was discussed two verses ago, we're on verse 13. In verse 11, Akura was speaking about this same Krishna who I'm going to see. He's the same one who glanced over the field of the material energy, Prakriti, to bring about creation. I'm going to go see him. And that same Supreme Lord, he's taken birth in the same dynasty that I have. Because he's just merciful. You can't see him otherwise. Who can see Mahavishnu? Forget it. It's not humanly possible. But if he reveals himself, so he's revealing himself by this, you know, little 11-year-old, 12-year-old boy's form that we can see. I'm going to go see him. How merciful. Just like the deity form that sometimes people have deities in their home. That's a mercy form. He has no material form. He has a spiritual form. But his spiritual form can be manifest, if he so desires, in a form that we can worship. Even we're conditioned souls, we don't have spiritual vision. He can make himself accessible in a deity form or in a picture. According to the scriptures that describe worshipable forms of deity, one of them is picture. I mean, it doesn't say photograph, because there wasn't photographs when the Vedas were written. But painting by color on two-dimensional, that can be worshipped. And Krishna can be approached. He can reveal himself through that form. He can be worshipped and he can exchange with us through that form. So, Jiva Goswami is saying this verse 13 is making the connection with the 11 and 12. What's that? He's the Lord who has glanced over Prakriti. And then verse 12 says, that Lord whose actions and qualities purify the universe, he brings about the universe, he purifies the universe, and now he's appeared. Those three verses are together. He creates the universe by his glance, ikshate. He purifies the universe by his qualities and by his activities. And he has appeared. In the verse, the word kila is found, which kila means something that's well known. Kila, something that's well known. The devotees know, the perfected soul, the Atmaramas, they know it's truth. It's just like an exclamation point. He acts for the benefit of the devatas like Brahma and Shiva who maintain Bhagavad Dharma. They're doing their duties in the universe and, at the same time, they're doing Bhagavad Dharma. We can do Bhagavad Dharma. We can do our duties in whatever, sannyas life, student life, married life, this ashram, that ashram, this varna, that varna. From whatever our natural position is, we can be engaged in Bhagavad Dharma. We can also be maintainers of the principles of Dharma as the demigods. And it benefits us and it benefits others who we come in contact with. That's nice. If you can just by your life, you can benefit others. That's pretty nice. Not only does he benefit those who see his avatar form, he spreads his fame, which the devatas, who are most worthy of worship, glorify, and which is beneficial for unlimited beings, even the lowest beings, even Krishna's partial avatars, Angsa avatars, like Angsa avatars. Angsa means a part. And so there's Svangsa and Vivinangsa. There's parts and there's holes. So sometimes Krishna expands. For example, a nice example is Narada Muni. Narada Muni is or Brahma. Narada Muni and Brahma are jivas. They're not in the category of Vishnu Tattva. They're in category of Jiva Tattva. But they're empowered. Narada is really empowered with the fullness of the Lord's bhakti shakti. Narada. Bhakti shakti. Just a tiny jiva, but he's empowered and he's really powerful. Or Brahma. He is empowered with the Lord's creative potency. Srishti shakti. King Prithu. He's empowered, living entity, empowered by the Lord's ruling potency, Palana Shakti. So sometimes it's his own personal expansion. Sometimes it's a living entity, a tiny spark, that's also functioning as an avatar of him. So his presence is beneficial for everyone. That's the point. Even Krishna's Angsa avatars are special. The previous verse, text 12, explained that. The Lord in performing his actions is not like us, who are controlled by karma. Rather, he is independent. He is in a different category. He's in the Ishwara category. He's not the controlled, he's the controller. And that's the person I'm going to see, Kura is considering. One who's not controlled, but the controller of all who are controlled. Next is Sanatana Goswami. Sanatana Goswami is one of the six Goswami followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Some of you are newer, so just a little background. You all know who is Krishna. And after Krishna disappeared, He appears once in a day of Brahma, which is a long time. It's a long time. In one day of Brahma, there's 1,000 cycles of the four yugas. And one cycle of the four yugas is 4,320,000 years. That's one cycle of four yugas. And then there's 1,000 of those. And once in that period of time, Krishna appears. And after Krishna appears, once in the day of Brahma, at night, Brahma goes to sleep of equal duration as his day. So, after Krishna departs, Lord Chaitanya appears once in the day of Brahma to teach the way of surrendering to Krishna. You've begun to study Bhagavad Gita, yes? So, the concluding teaching of Bhagavad Gita is, have you learned some verses yet? Do you know this one? Sarva dharmam parityaja mamekam sharanam braja aham tvam sarva papebhyo mokshayishyami masuchaha. You know the verse? No, you're behind you, to your left. Do you know the verse? Let's say it together, those of you that know. Sarva dharmam parityaja mam ekam sharanam braja aham tvam sarva papebhyo mokshayishyami masuchaha. It's a nice verse, you should learn it. So, all varieties of dharma, because we were speaking before about dharma, they're secondary to one ultimate principle. What's that one ultimate principle? Mam ekam sharanam. Surrender to me. Take shelter of me. Give yourself to me entirely. So, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appears to teach how to do that by his own example. It's Krishna teaching how to be a devotee of Krishna. Because who can be a better teacher than Krishna? How to be a devotee of Krishna. So that's Lord Chaitanya. And Lord Chaitanya had many, 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 many transcendental associates. And chief amongst them are the six Goswamis of Vrindavan. Six Goswamis, you'll hear that again and again. The six Goswamis of Vrindavan, principal followers of Lord Chaitanya. And the foremost amongst them, eldest, is Sanatana Goswami. So Sanatana Goswami is going to comment on this verse, 10.38.13. Here's his commentary. Now in Vraja, manifesting his nature as Bhagavan, Krishna has appeared. He is shown more particularly than previously. Previously means other incarnations. Now he's manifesting his fullness. But he has also appeared in the Yadu dynasty. Even though he is the creator, he has appeared now. And this is well known in the scriptures, this word Kila again. He benefits the Devatas who protect his laws. If the Devatas were to suffer, his own laws would not be true, because he protects those who uphold his laws. He benefits Brahma, who institutes his law. Institutes. That is, Brahma had the knowledge of the Vedas manifest in his heart, and he spoke them. And he, Brahma, creates the praja, the offspring, that fill up the universe, and he gives the principles of Dharma for them to live by. That's what's being said. So Krishna is appearing to benefit Brahma, to help him uphold Dharma. The Lord appeared in the world by Brahma's request. the demigods at the shore of the milk ocean appealing, Vishnu, please help. So the Lord appeared at Brahma's request. It was said, Vikhana Sartita, Brahma prayed that you come by benefit. That's a text from 10th canto. By benefiting the creator of the world, all beings of the world get benefit. Paragraph. Spreading his fame more than previously, Vistarayam, because he displays unlimited qualities of Bhagavan, he lives in Braja. Now, Braja is kind of like a contrast to a place of many, many, many virtues and qualities and opulences, because Braja is cowherd village. Simple. Although its appearance is simple, its spiritual opulence is unsurpassed. It doesn't show the worldly kind of opulence, it shows the spiritual opulence. This display cannot occur elsewhere. He displays his unlimited powers. Ishwaraha. As Ishwara, by his desire alone, staying in Vrindavan, he can relieve the earth of its burden by killing Kamsa and benefit the devatas in order to spread his fame. The devatas sing about the Lord, who has unlimited auspicious qualities, from whom unlimited auspiciousness arises, who is auspicious for the materialists, those who are aspirants for liberation, the already liberated, and the devotees. He is auspicious for practitioners as well as persons who are perfected. Thus, he should somehow come from Braja. Come from Braja means he wants Krishna to spread that auspiciousness outside of Braja, starting with Mathura, starting with, help, take care of this wicked Kamsa. Because the people in Mathura and all over the place, they're afraid of him. And they have reason, because he's mean and he's very powerful. And people cross him, they're dead. You know, he's a bad guy. He's a real bad guy. There's a little more reference that I'll make, and we'll finish for this morning. Now it's afternoon. There's a reference to this verse, 10:38-13, found in one of the biographies of Lord Chaitanya, because we talked about who was Lord Chaitanya already. Chaitanya Bhagavat. Just like Vyasadeva compiled the history of Krishna's life in Bhagavat Purana, or Srimad Bhagavatam. That's Vyasadeva's competition, the composition. So there's a similar composition about the life of Lord Chaitanya called Chaitanya Bhagavat. Bhagavat Purana and Chaitanya Bhagavat. And there it says, the Lord always enjoys pastimes with his servants. He incarnates for the sake of his servants. He's just giving them pleasure. He doesn't have to do anything. He's not obliged. He's reciprocating with their love. That's why he comes. And then there's a reference to a Katha Upanishad verse. Prabhupada would sometimes quote this. Nayam atma pravachanena labhyo namedasat na bahu na shutena yam evaisha vinute tena labhyas tasyaiva atma vivrinute tanum syam. The translation? The Supreme Lord is not obtained by pravachanena, expert explanations, by vast intelligence, medasa, or even by much hearing, bahuna shrutena, He is obtained only by one whom he himself chooses. To such a person, he manifests his own form. That's Kathopanishad. So Akura is going to see Krishna. And he's in the beginning of his prayers, he's thinking, how am I going to be able to see Krishna? I'm a materialist, I'm an absorbed householder, I'm not a learned fellow, I'm not a renunciate, I'm not a big sadhu. How is it possible? I have no qualification. It's humility. And then he says, well, wait a minute. Krishna is merciful. And Krishna shows himself to whoever, like this is saying, to whoever he wants to show himself to. So there's a chance I'll actually see Krishna. I've been eager. And then he says, it's definitely a fact. Because I'm doing some service for him, so I'll see him. And he's there. So he goes through these different ecstatic emotions. And this verse is confirming the same. Kathopanishad. We are not eligible to see him unless he wishes to reveal himself to us. So we're like your son's question about making an offering. We may not see Krishna eat everything, but he eats everything. And he leaves prasadam. Now he can eat. In our Prabhupada set up this practice in our temples all over the world. Here's a nice Prabhupada story. Once upon a time, Prabhupada sent three householder couples to London to establish a temple in London. And they're really nice devotees. And they thought, you know, the best way to make London Krishna conscious is if the Beatles could become Krishna conscious. And then the whole of London would become Krishna conscious. So they targeted helping the Beatles become Krishna conscious. But they did it very smart. They just brought prasadam. And they were friendly, and they were musical, and they never asked them anything. They made friends through prasadam. And then gradually, you know, they didn't even need a pass to get into the back. Every time there was a concert, backstage, there they were with prasadam. And then when they had recordings, they were there with prasadam, and they're just part of the Beatles' life. And at a certain point in time, one of those three couples, there was a lady, Yamuna Dasi, that had a superlative voice. And George Harrison said to Yamuna, she told me this story twice. George said to her, you sing so nicely. If you want, I can make you famous. I know how to do it. Just tell me. I'll help you do it. She said, let me think about it. Because you can do that, become famous for Krishna. She came back a few days later, she told me, and said, no, I don't want that lifestyle. I just want to sing for Krishna. So then George said, okay, let's make a record for Krishna. Right in the studio. So it was a best-selling, now they don't do things the same way, but however they do it, I don't know, digital today. But then it was recordings. It was a 45 RPM. One side was the Hare Krishna mantra, and the other side was the Govinda prayers. Govindam Adipurusham Tamaham Bhajami Govindam Adip. So George Harrison did all the musicals in the background. Yamuna was doing the singing. And when Prabhupada heard it, he cried. They gave him a copy. They wanted to see his response. And he cried. And he said, this should be sung in all of our temples. All over the world, when they greet after Mangal Arati, deity service, dressing the deity, bathing the deity, ornamenting garlands, everything, making the offering to the deity. The food is offered to Krishna. and then curtain opens. So when the curtain opens, we, to this day, in all of our centers all over the world, we sing that song that George Harrison composed, the musical he composed. And one of those songs, the first one, Angani Yasa Sakalendriya Vritti Manti. Angani, Anga, Sakalendriya, each of his indriyas is interchangeable with his other indriyas. That's Krishna, Govinda. He can eat with his ears. Or he can eat with his eyes. We only have one way we can eat, that's this one. But Krishna isn't limited like that. Just like with his eyes he can create. We can't do that. Imagine if you looked at somebody and there was pregnancy or something. That might be a problem. But you know, that's what Mahavishnu did. He just looked at Prakriti and there was creation. So, he's all powerful, and so if he chooses from his all powerfulness, if he chooses, he can reveal himself to others, just like that. Voila. Voila is a French word. You heard that one before? Voila. Means there it is. Kind of like the Sanskrit bhavati. There it is. So this is the last. In addition to the verse that we recited this morning, 10:38-13, I'll read it again at the end. But there's another one from Canto 10, chapter 63. Canto 10, chapter 63. With various intentions, this is a translation of a verse, you perform pastimes to maintain the demigods, the saintly persons, and the codes of religion for this world. By these pastimes, you also kill those who stray from the right path and live by violence. Indeed, your present incarnation is meant to relieve the earth's burden, which is exactly why he appeared, because the demigod said, please relieve the burden of the earth from these demoniac kings. They're torturing people. They're horrible people. And it's not just one or two. It's place is overrun. Please come. Please help. It's beyond our control to do anything with these people. So Krishna came, brought auspiciousness, and he relieved the earth of the burden of those terrible people. It gave them liberation and made everything nice during Krishna's pastimes. So he, even for persons who are non-virtuous, non-religious, don't follow Dharma at all, even for those persons, he can make himself visible and elevate them. And if they just are very, very stubborn, he can liberate them by those killed by Krishna, they achieved liberation. Now he knows that. Akura knows that. And he knows that he's going to kill Kamsa and Kamsa is going to get liberation. Isn't that nice? The earth gets relieved and Kamsa gets liberation. So he's so merciful. He came into this world to bring this auspiciousness by his qualities and by his pastimes. I'm really looking forward to the next step. Bring auspiciousness to Mathura. And when Narada visits Krishna, just before Akura visited, the very morning that Akura left Mathura, Narada had already visited, the same day, had already visited Krishna. And said this, more or less the same thing. I long to see the day when those of your devotees here and there and all around, they're fearful of these demoniac kings. I long to see the day when you relieve them of that fear, because by your own spiritual potency, immediately their fear will be dissipated. and these terrible persons, they'll be liberated from that position of terrorizing others.
I long to see the day.
So, Makura's pretty fired up for that too. He really wants to see Krishna free the Yadu dynasty family members, because before Kamsa became king, who was king? Ugrasena, his father. So what did Kamsa do? He threw his father in jail. Not a nice guy. Threw his father in jail, and his sister put her in jail, along with Vasudeva, and then proceeded to kill the first six children. He's not a nice man. And everyone was like, so the Yadu dynasty, when he took over, we're out of here. They ran, fled for their lives. But they're actually the ruling family, and he's just like a terrible person within the ruling family, who's just a terrorist. So they really want to, they were afraid of him. They wanted to see relief, please. So Krishna came to give that relief. And Akura is the facilitator for bringing them that relief. He's really happy to see Krishna and to see not only his family members, but the whole planet Earth relieved from that burden of these demoniac kings. So that's our discussion. It's been 1 hour. Let's see if there's some comments or questions. Yeah?
Guru Maharaj, I have two questions. One is just to see, check my understanding is correct. Katopanishad verse where it says, Yame Vaishya Vrinate Tena Labhyas. That shloka, it says that Krishna reveals his mercy himself to whomsoever he wishes to do so.
Yeah.
So then, can I connect that with the verse that Rupa Goswami has written, Atasri Krishna Namadi, and then there also Swayam Eva Spuradhyata?
Yes, same.
Krishna reveals himself to
those who are qualified.
Who wishes, but then the qualification is.
Yes. Now, the others could see him, like Kamsa saw him, or the washerman saw him, or others that weren't devotees saw him, but they didn't see him as he is. Svayam eva svaratya does see him as he is. And then there's a qualification to see him as he is, and that's purity. But others, when Krishna came, they could see him, but they just couldn't see him as he is. They saw him in different ways.
And that is why Akrura is praying that to see him in a proper...
Yes.
With a proper consciousness.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. And my second question, Maharaj, is, can you explain the liberation, the Sayujya liberation? What will the soul do after that liberation? What is the activity of that?
They don't do any activity.
No activity.
They just sat. They exist. Like a star twinkling in the sky. They twinkle.
And do they get out of there at all? Or?
Well, because the nature of the soul is the same as the nature of Krishna, but just tiny. So Krishna is Sachit Ananda, and their Ananda is not being fulfilled. And so what happens is they fall again to a place where there's some activity. They come back again to the material world. Arulya krichchena param param tada patantyada. So they come back again to an embodied position so they can have activity to experience material happiness. But there is no ananda in material happiness. But they have another opportunity to engage in taking shelter of the Supreme Person. And that Brahmananda is not the same as Premananda. Does anybody here not understand that? Should I explain? Brahmananda is the happiness of Aham Brahmasmi. I am spirit. And Premananda is the happiness of love in relation to the Supreme Person. Parama Purusha, the Supreme Person. In loving exchange, that's Premananda. It's said in the scriptures that the happiness that's in Brahmananda cannot even be compared to one fraction of a drop in an ocean of the happiness of Premananda. It's insignificant. And what does one do there? You just exist, period. No activity. Cessation of material misery. That's negation of material misery. But no positive happiness other than I exist. That's not real happiness. It's not complete happiness. I exist. So wanting that, what happens according to the Bhagavatam, that one will fall from that position after some time in pursuit of greater happiness than just I exist. But it's not found here either. Okay, someone else? Hey, up front here.
Why can't Rama fly? But why can Hanuman fly? Why can't Rama fly with Hanuman?
Okay, I think I understand the question. Hanuman can fly. Why Ram can't fly? Ram can do anything. Let me ask you: is there something Ram cannot do? He's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He can do anything. Anything. He can make the universe disappear. He can create another universe. He certainly can fly. But he's giving Hanuman some service. Isn't that nice? He doesn't need anybody to do anything. But he gives others some service to do. And sometimes Hanuman's ability to fly is really helpful. So he gets the chance to serve. Okay?
I have another question.
You have another question.
Why does Hanuman need a gada? Can't he just have a bow and arrow like Rama?
Why does Lord Hanuman need a gada, a club? Can't he use bow and arrow like Lord Ramachandra?
Sure, but he likes a club. He sometimes uses rocks and boulders and tree trunks and sometimes he uses a club. Sometimes he just uses his fist. But he leaves the bow fighting to Ram. He likes the up-close combat. Sako. That's Hanuman. Okay?
So, why is Krishna blue and Balaram white?
Why is Krishna blue and Balaram white? Because he wants to be. He doesn't need a reason. He doesn't need a reason. Sometimes, Krishna appears in Dwarapa Yuga, right? So there's the four yugas. You know about that, right? Satya, Treta, Dwarapa. Ram appears in the second yuga, which is Dwarapa Yuga. The tree can be Treta Yuga. Krishna. Ram appears in Treta Yuga. So there's colors of the yuga avatars. Anyway, this is a little complicated. Too much information for you. Krishna's one explanation of why Krishna appears in a darkish color besides that's his color. So he appears in that which is his color. What happens when you do some coloring sometimes, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So supposing you take your paint box and you mix red and blue and purple and green and orange and this and that color, and you mix them all up, what does it come out?
Like brown or black?
Yeah, black. Krishna is the sum total of everything. His color is the sum total of everything. That's what our acharyas say. Why is he black? Because he's the sum total of everything. But it's his color. It's not a material color. It's his cue, duty. We were at somebody's home the other day, and the girl's name was Duty. Means luster. Duty means luster. So Krishna's luster is blackish. Radha's luster is golden. And Balaram's luster is white like milk. So it's just his color, or his luster.
Okay.
Okay. In the back there.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Like in Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says, like, he is the giver of remembrance and forgetfulness.
Mm.
Right? So generally my question is like, I remember mostly the material things, but not the spiritual things. So in that case also, the Krishna is playing a role, like he's
sure.
giving like forgetfulness for me to remember the spiritual or what about him.
Well, he's the source of both, and he's reciprocating with our tendencies. We discussed this word the other day, vasana.
Yes.
Remember
yes.
that?
Yes.
Vasana. Vasana, in one sense, I'm going to ask a Sanskrit scholar this question, and I know who I'm going to ask. But samskara is also translated as impression, and vasana is sometimes translated as impression. So what's the difference between the two? I'm not a Sanskrit scholar, I'm going to ask. But vasana carries another connotation. It's like a tendency. Long-standing tendencies built over many lifetimes, that's a vasana. It's due to impressions, but impressions stored and built up, and they become like our vasana, our tendencies. So, you and me and all of us, we have our tendencies, and the tendency moves in the direction of the world around us instead of the world within us. You know, the affairs, subtle as well, subtle and gross affairs of this world. And we're less inclined, we're less prone to, or less habituated to pay attention to the world within us, the happiness within us. So Krishna knows your vasanas, and Krishna is willing to help you, but it may take a little time, it may take some purification, and for your bhakti to grow and grow, and then Krishna can relieve and eliminate some of those tendencies, and then the tendency starts to become the healthy one, the spiritual one, the natural one, that's of the soul. But we just have to. So your question is, where is it coming from, and why? It's coming from Krishna because of our tendencies, long-standing tendencies. But there's really good news. Krishna will remove that. Read carefully Bhagavad Gita, chapter 10, text 11, where Krishna says he'll relieve you of those tendencies, residual tendencies, personally. And otherwise, the tendencies remain. So in other words, the mechanical processes of yoga don't dismiss tendencies. They'll come back. Like a bungee cord. You kids, you know what a bungee cord is? That kind of elastic thing, it has two hooks on the end. You use it to stretch and hold something in place. You hook it on something. You know what that is? You don't know what that is. It's common in the West, at least. So when you unhook the hook, the elastic goes back to where it was. So you can stretch a bit without bhakti, and you can start to live a life that's a little bit patterned differently, But as soon as you unhook the two hooks, it's back to where it was before. The tendency resumes. So what breaks tendencies is Krishna. So therefore we're dependent to our material conditioning to be squeaky clean, completely not just reduced but gone permanently. We're depending upon Krishna. Krishna can do that. Krishna will do that. But we have to be patient and a little practicing, perseverant, and depend on mercy. And Krishna says, oh, she really wants me. Okay. Gone. Clean. Here I am.
Thank you, Maharaj.
It's not quite like, you know, snap of the fingers, but it's the gradual that comes to that stage. Krishna wants to, he's examining, what do you really want? I want to be good. Okay, you can be good. I want you, well, I don't know. Are you sure? How about something over there? How about something over there? He's examining. Upadrashta anamanta cha. Any ladies in the back there? You have something you'd like to discuss? No? Okay. Okay, up here. Go ahead while you have the mic.
So in Bhagavad Gita 18.66, Krishna says that he will give liberation. So what kind of liberation he's talking about in that sloka, Maharaj? Like in out of five liberations.
Which
Sarva dharman parityajya, sarva papebhyo mokshishyami masochya.
Well, it depends. The answer depends. What type of liberation depends upon our orientation towards Krishna. He's ready. What do we want? And so if we want him in full, he'll give himself. But what do we want?
Okay.
So it depends on our orientation to him. And that connects with another verse of Bhagavad Gita, of the different types of liberation. Yayatham mam prapadyante tang sadaiva bhajamyaham. As they bhajami, as they worship me, I reciprocate. Mm-hmm. He's very flexible.
Yes, Maharaj, thank you.
Maharaj, this question is from today morning's class. You said one should hear Hare Krishna Mahamantra from spiritual ears. So I was trying to understand how would I know whether I'm hearing from my spiritual ears or general?
You would know because you'd feel ecstasy.
Oh. Okay, Maharaj.
How do you know when you're full? Nobody has to tell you. You feel full.
Yes.
So when you're feeling the fullness of the presence of Krishna, you're hearing with your spiritual ear.
Is there a way to activate it if I'm not able to experience it?
You practice. You know, the effort and mercy. Same formula. Online? Yeah.
Question from Amara Mataji. Are vasanas and fruity work similar? Can you kindly elaborate on why one is attached to fruity work?
Well, they're similar but different, obviously, because they're two different terms. Karma means what it means, and vasana means what it means, and they're similar, but they're not the same. Karma, you know, I can give the definition, but she knows the definition. Karma means action, reaction. Vasana means tendency. There's two different terms, two different meanings. There's some overlap, but they're not the same. And this second is, what was the second?
Can you kindly elaborate on why one is attached to fruitive work?
Oh, that's easy. I want to enjoy. That's why. And that's the way to enjoy. Get stuff, and then I can enjoy. So let me go work to get stuff so I can enjoy. Because I want to enjoy. Parentheses, separate from Krishna. That's fruitive work. Where's work? Why we? There's a tendency. I want to enjoy separately from Krishna. Okay?
This question is from Sanchari. I wanted to first check if the following understanding was correct. When you were speaking about Akrura's analysis of his own emotions as he went from humility to the spiritual understanding in thinking of how, while his feelings of humility are in the spiritual platform,
yeah,
he is actually performing a duty for Krishna, so he can't get lost in those feelings.
No, the premise of her question is misleading. His humility is not material. His humility is totally spiritual. There's a difference between material and spiritual, anything, including spiritual, material humility. His humility is an ecstasy. It's one of the 33 Vyabhichari Bhavas. In Sanchari, you can look it up in Chaitanya Charitamrita. It's one of the 33 Vyabhichari Bhavas. It's not material. And he's just moving like waves in the ocean of prema. There's this wave, and then there's that wave, and then there's that wave, and it's an ecstatic emotion, spiritual emotion.
And her question continues, and second, I was relating this to the spiritual journey of a regular spirit soul and how humility almost becomes a quality controlled by the mind and sometimes keeps one from actually persisting in their services.
That's material humility, not spiritual.
So I was just thinking about this in a general sense. In these instances, how does one follow in Akrura's footsteps in changing the frame of thinking to continue forward?
It requires a spiritual conception and purity. So you have to strive for spiritual conception and purity, and then you can follow Akrura. Otherwise, you won't understand Akrura, and you'll be bewildered and everything.
Next question. If someone is aspiring for Samipya liberation, to be with Lord in his abode, Goloka, will that person get Krishna Prema also? Are Samipya liberation and Krishna Prema are different?
This is an academic question because supposing that there's the Vaikuntha realm and there's the Goloka realm and there's the Ayodhya realm. So in the Vaikuntha realm, getting the Lord's association has a certain mood to it. In Ayodhya, there's a certain mood to it, and in Goloka, there's a certain mood to it. But getting the Lord's association in Goloka requires something very special. So I don't know what the reference is to her question, but the Lord's association in Goloka is through the mercy of one of the associates of the Lord in Goloka. So, you know, the question itself is a little, I don't know, misleading, incompletely informed of what that kind of liberation means in Goloka. And for the audience here, I don't know if it's really relatable. So I'm just going to go to the next question. That's it. Just for the audience here, there's, according to the Bhagavatam and our Vaishnava literature, prema exists, love of God exists in these three realms. Haridam, and the topmost region of Haridam is Ayodhya Dham and Goloka Dham. And in Goloka Dham, there's three main regions, Vrindavan, Mathura, and Dwarka. It's a little, it's detailed, but there's degrees of sweetness or madhurya, intimacy, where in Vrindavan, Krishna may show his divinity, and they don't, it bounces. It just, it's eclipsed by the sweetness of their love. Like Mother Jasoda, you know, the classic. She looks inside Krishna's mouth and she sees the universe. And she sees all kinds of things. And she goes, what is this? And she considers what it might be, maybe this, maybe that, maybe that. And that vision just goes and she gets overwhelmed with her motherly affection. She forgets the whole thing. She can't see his divinity because of the intensity of her love as mother. She can't see his divinity, although he's showing it to her. And just intensifies her love. So that's Vrindavan. And then going further out, Mathura, then further out, Dwarka, then further out, Ayodhya, then further out, Vaikuntha. There's less and less and less of that intimacy and more and more and more of the majesty or Aishwarya. So this is just a mini lesson in their degrees of pure love. That pure love which is influenced by sweetness is superlative. The love of the residents of Vrindavan is just astonishing, let's say, to Queen Kunti. In Queen Kunti's prayers, Canto 10, Chapter 8, excuse me, Canto 1, Chapter 8, Queen Kunti. She understands Krishna as super soul. She can't understand the love of Mother Jasoda. She reveres the love of Mother Jasoda, but she can't understand it. And she can't understand the love that Krishna has for Mother Jasoda. Because she sees, here's Krishna, who is my nephew, my brother's son. But I see him as super soul. He's treating me like his aunt, his father's sister. And he comes and touches my feet, and I go, no, you're the personality of Godhead, you're the super soul. So her heart is troubled. But Mother Jasoda, she's got a little stick, a lati, a little skinny stick in her hand. And Krishna's crying in fear of the stick in Mother Jasoda's hand. So she throws the stick away because she can't stand to see Krishna cry. And Krishna's, it's not crocodile tears. He's not play acting. He's crying in fear of the stick in Mother Jasoda's hands. The love that Krishna has for her and that she has for Krishna, Queen Kunti can't enter into that. It's beyond her capacity. She marvels, but she can't understand it. So, the love in Vrindavan is very special. There's a sweetness, an intimacy, a closeness of affection that's beyond the understanding of others who are also pure devotees. There's many examples of that. So that's where this discussion comes from. The question that was just raised. So,
it's one question.
Yeah?
The Tatyanukampam verse, Mukti Pade Sadaya Bhak, that Mukti, the liberation, what is that liberation?
It's the same as her question. It's same one, same question. Depends on one's regard.
Maharaj, in this question of Samipya Mukti, I remember discussing this with my brother, and that was an open question for me and for him. Basically, the difference between Samipya and Salokya. Salokya is, just want to double check if our understanding is right. Salukya means a devotee who will be in Vaikuntha in the same planet, but he cannot see the Lord directly, but he is in the same loka. Samipya means he is near. So we both had a question mark, so we didn't get that, so want to understand from
I'd never heard that explanation before. It's okay. Interesting. And maybe, you know, maybe right, maybe proximate, it may be far off. But to say specifically, Salokya means you don't see the Lord. You're just on the same planet.
We don't see the Lord.
That seems like a concoction.
Okay. Could be Maharaj then. Okay. And is these liberations different from Vaikuntha and Goloka again?
Sure.
I mean, Samipya here and Samipya in Goloka?
Well, those who associate with the Lord in Goloka and those who associate with the Lord in Vaikuntha, the experience is different. The mood is different.
Mood is different.
Right? Okay. Confirmed.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Yes.
When you offer to Krishna, why do you put a tulsi?
Why do you do what?
When you like offer
to Krishna. You put a tulsi leaf?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a nice question. Because Krishna likes tulsi leaves.
Okay.
Because tulsi is the giver of bhakti. And so you're giving, along with that which you're offering, a tulsi leaf, which is the product of Tulsi who loves Krishna and gives bhakti to others. So Krishna likes. That's why we do, because Krishna likes.
Okay, I have another question.
Okay.
I heard that tulsi like is like a person, but then why do we eat it then?
What's a person?
Tulsi.
Tulsi.
Tulsi is a personified. She's a devotee.
Well, the tulsi plant is a person, but your understanding is the leaf is a person?
I'm saying
we
like
don't
that.
Eat the plant.
I'm saying
we
that.
Eat because like, you know. Because the plant, the tulsi plant, is making an offering of service to Krishna, and you're accepting the remnants of the offering of service to Krishna.
Okay.
Okay. That was a good question, though.